Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Veritas. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
You can't go more than 15 seconds into any discussion of cybersecurity before the topic turns to ransomware. So far, federal agencies have not had their data held hostage for money, nor are they taking anything for granted. For a government-wide view, I spoke with the Chief Information Officer at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, Bob Costello.
So we're definitely seeing in the news that ransomware is happening all over, whether it's a school, hospital systems, government agencies. So we're definitely seeing an increase in the number of attacks. We're also seeing an increase in what's getting reported to us, but we also know, too, that a lot isn't probably getting reported across all different sectors. So we really do encourage people to reach out and report to the appropriate authorities when these issues happen. We also encourage everyone to visit stopransomware.gov, which has an incredible amount of resources that explain ransomware, who to reach out to, methodologies to mitigate it when it happens, and also prevention methods as well.
What is the major vector? Is it still basically phishing, or are there other types of hack attacks, old-fashioned, I call them, to try to plant things in people's networks?
Sure, that's a great question. Phishing, of course, is still very prevalent. We do encourage everyone to run, you know, phishing campaigns internally and keep up that education. We're also seeing now, supply chain attacks. SolarWinds taught us a lot. Those type of attacks can certainly serve as vectors to plant ransomware or other malware into people's networks. Log4j is another good example. While, you know, that gave you essentially root access, so you could very easily drop some malware. You patch Log4j, but that malware is still there. So we really do want people to be cognizant of all different vectors. Phishing is certainly a big component of this, but there are now, unfortunately, just so many different vectors where ransomware can be injected and then activated later. We see a lot of that too. Someone drops something, it's not activated right away. It could be months or even years later when the attacker activates that ransomware or malware.
And I guess maybe the implications of Log4j are not only that it was something that was planted in, or the potential to be planted in many instances of software, but the fact that you could launch, that someone could launch an executable from what is basically a static log file, which I think that was the real surprise, wasn't it? More than how ubiquitous the software is.
Yeah, I think we were all, at least in the cyber and IT community, taken aback by how easy it was to exploit that. The prevalence of the instantiations of Log4j, of course, made it all that much worse. You can see a lot on the CISA webpage on it, as well as on a lot of our channels elsewhere. And I think you're definitely seeing that concern. To your exact point, it was widely used. We didn't know about it. We don't know how long it was. Well, we know it was out there for a very extensive period of time in numerous different versions. And so we absolutely know that people could have used that as a very easy vector to get into networks, to drop some malware, and then exit out even after we patch Log4.
And it's also probably an alert or a reminder that it is not simply application software from proprietary vendors, but also just basic open source that everybody uses that can be sources of trouble.
Absolutely. So I think everyone needs to understand software supply chain. I think people also do need to understand how their systems work, what connects to the internet, what vectors exist, where you're doing, you know, mitigation efforts at your perimeter. We absolutely encourage everyone to start moving to a zero trust model, but we know that's hard. It doesn't happen overnight. So we still very much have in the public and private sector, those castle and moat, you know, designs that still exist. But we definitely encourage people to start looking at things that can mitigate the blast zone, have an understanding of their networks, what's connecting where, and then also understanding what's normal on your network and what's not normal. So you can start seeing different traffic patterns or anomaly detection as well, because that can be another good indicator. When you see a change, it may not be anything malicious, but it could be, and you need to hunt that down.
And I want to get back to the zero trust question, but first I wanted to ask you about continuous monitoring, which has been a DHS kind of sponsored and government-wide program now for many years. And when you see things like the Log4j as a possible launch point for ransomware, does that expand what it is that people have to continuously monitor? Because I think, again, that was thought of mainly to cover your application software from vendors to make sure you're patched there, but not to the utilities that everyone sort of took for granted down there deep in the network, just simply sitting there and running.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. And I think it's one of the challenges that we often have. Most organizations are not staffed to monitor everything. And often for many years, we told everyone, look at your log files, look at your log files. And now one of the core foundations of what was doing logging, to your point, on a lot of applications and a lot of hardware as well. This was widely used across the hardware vendors as well. What was compromised. So I think to your point, continuous monitoring, continuous mitigation, continuous improvement are all things we need to be looking at. I think the static models don't really work anymore. And that's really hard because often, at least in the federal government, we're staffed at certain levels. Our funding comes in very particular ways that can be hard sometimes for us to pivot on. And that's why we're really trying hard at CISA to improve our partnership with the private sector, the research community. It's why we had a very successful launch of HackDHS. So we're really trying to broaden our horizons here internally at DHS to improve. But we want people to also look at the things that we're doing and say, we should pick that up and do it in our organization as well. I think those different methodologies can really help improve the overall security.
And by the way, to the extent that you can reveal it, the reports coming to CISA from agencies, you mentioned there's a lot of attacks going on in ransomware. Do attacks equate to successful launches of ransomware, or is it simply they're attacking and it's being repelled? Because we haven't heard of any agencies being actually, at the federal level, held up for money with their data in ransom.
Yeah, and a lot of that's handled out of our cybersecurity director. It's different than the CIO. But I do read some of the same reports that you do. I have not luckily seen any federal agencies. We have seen a number, though, of, state, local environments, public health or private health communities. And I think that just tells us, it could just be a matter of time. We certainly don't want it to happen. We want to take every effort we can to ensure that it doesn't. But we certainly see this affecting all, facets of American life, the private and public sector.
And as the CIO, as you mentioned a moment ago, you are not the cyber directorate that's facing out to agencies. So in a sense, CISA has to talk to itself. That is, they have to talk to you as the CIO and you to them, even though you're under the same roof. And what are some of the best practices that you are urging yourself, let's say, to do at CISA?
Sure. Well, I think first, training, empowering your teams. We need to take a hard look at ourselves. I think the one of the most important things is you can't make security findings negative for the people working on them or for the teams. I'm not saying that it's a positive, but you can't just hammer people down and say, well, your system has all these issues. We have to all work together to resolve them and continuously get better. I think that's also something that I'm doing here, taking a hard look at what tools we're using, how often we're scanning our systems, how our systems connect, how they're documented. I'm a big believer in real-time documentation as we kind of move out from those old static models. We really want to move to, SecDevOps for a lot of our application development here at CISA, but we should also be taking a hard look at who's on our network, how they connect. Are we taking a good look at identity? Identity is probably one of the biggest areas that I think all agencies, public, private, need to take a hard look at, because once your identity is compromised, it's very hard sometimes to recover from those types of attacks.
So that gets everyone back to the two-factor idea and to the zero trust idea, because identities are what you have to keep out or let in, basically.
Absolutely. And we're running a two-factor event this month where we're trying to get out there that we really want people to be looking at, moving beyond username, password across all their systems. But you have to do it correctly and securely. to ensure that you're not creating additional vectors or additional issues as you implement those solutions.
Bob Costello, Chief Information Officer at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Whether you're migrating to the cloud, from the cloud, or between clouds, protecting your data and ensuring business continuity are critical priorities. Veritas can help you build a unified multi-cloud strategy with resiliency at its core to help ensure strategic and mission-critical decisions. Our enterprise data services platform is designed to give government agencies the confidence and control to transform, protect, and optimize your multi-cloud. Visit veritas.com/government for more information.
Welcome back to our interview with Bob Costello, Chief Information Officer at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Our topic is ransomware and how to deal with it government-wide. And visibility into your assets, of course, is important to protect your systems. And that gets to the question of SBOMs and, you know, the software bills of material that agencies are supposed to have. I think that seems like a not fully understood operational requirement. What's your best advice for, you know, what form the SBOM itself takes? And then what do you do with it? It's not a piece of paper, I'm presuming, but it is software itself. And how do you use it? How do you operationalize it?
No, I think that is a great point. And I think it is going to be a challenge. I think it's something that we're all going to be working through. DHS and DOD are doing some great work in this area. We've had a number of working groups and some announcements. I do think that it's something that we have to understand is not perfect. It's not going to be like that hardware bill of materials that, you know, maybe has a legacy of almost 50 years. You know, we've been really good on import exports and the machinery sector or the hardware IT sector, where those companies probably have a longer history of working through that. So I think it's something that's going to be evolving. I do think, though, it's absolutely critical to the greatest extent possible, federal agencies start looking at that, you know, their developed applications, things that we're developing custom for the government. We really should know the fidelity of things we're pulling from public repositories and how we're updating them. I think oftentimes we were, heavy users of open source and code repos, which is great, but you do have to implement some things at your agency level to make sure you're not importing something that you can't trust the veracity of or where it's coming from. And that's gonna be hard. It's not gonna be easy. There'll be different answers, I think, for each agency. And I think you'll see more coming out this year on how we're working with the private sector to implement this on their solutions as well.
And getting back to the zero trust question, again, this is a thing that is not a product, as people say over and over again, but yet it's not nothing. It's something you have to do. So what is the best current advice from CISA in general about making your networks into zero trust? And that includes not just the human entities that are approaching the network, but any kind of automated entity also.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I would certainly encourage people to look at our zero trust publications on our website. I think that they're immensely helpful. I think one of the things that you brought up is really pertinent. It's not one product. It's not something that you buy and implement and you're done. It's a cultural change. It's an application change. For many large agencies and private sector, it could take years to fully implement this model across their environments. We have an opportunity right now at CISA where we're greenfielding a lot of new solutions. So I can implement that, you know, from the start, which is a lot easier when you start from the beginning to implement security or a zero trust model. So I'd certainly encourage people as they're standing up new applications, new systems, that they really look at the guidance around zero trust and make sure that they're implementing it to the greatest extent possible in those new systems. I also do encourage the agencies, particularly the federal agencies, we need to be talking to a lot of people. You need to have industry days, you need to have reverse industry days, you need to be talking to a lot of different vendors so you don't get locked into any one particularly, you know, thought process or technology that maybe does meet 80%, but what are you doing with the rest of that 20% that you need to be really, adherent to the tenets of zero trust?
Yes, and that gets to the idea of the two-factor being really important, because if something is coming at the network as a bot or as some kind of a automated software process, it is unlikely to have a cell phone on which it can receive the second factor.
Very true, although we are absolutely seeing, you know, two-factor has to be implemented correctly. Intercepting text messages is something that has happened and has been done. So you want to make sure that you're using good two-factor solutions that maybe mitigate some of those threats. And I think we're seeing too, no matter what, if you make things too difficult, people will find a way to circumvent it. So we want to make real, we want to ensure that as people are implementing these solutions, they are looking at all the different angles to make sure that they're actually improving their security model and ensuring that their users, particularly privileged users, won't find ways to circumvent things. Because that's something else that we need to be really, really hammering home is privileged users must be held to a higher standard for access across the board than standard users.
All right. And I wanted to move on to the issue of data recovery, because ransomware is very much related to the ability to recover prior to the ransomware, and so therefore having multiple backups and so forth. What's CISA's best thinking these days with respect to having a strategy? It really starts before you have an attack in order to be able to recover from the attack.
No, absolutely. So you bring up a really good point there. A lot of these solutions only work when they're implemented well before you're attacked, and that they're implemented in such a way that you can recover the data if other systems are compromised. So I think people need to take a hard look at where they're backing up their data, how they're encrypting that data, who can recover it. Is there a separate methodology? If your entire network is compromised, is that backup compromised? You have to make sure that your data is protected maybe differently than some of your other aspects. Do I really care if Bob's files are encrypted? Do I really need to be concerned about that database? And the answer might be yes and no on Bob's data, but you do need to take a hard look at particularly your mission systems, your business systems, how you're backing up that data, how it's encrypted, who can recover it, where you're storing those keys, and is it susceptible to a ransomware attack that could take down your primary functions as well. So I think it's hard. And I think in many cases, it is an area where we need outside help.
Sure. And it's complicated, too, by the fact of containerization and virtualization, because that multiplies the instances and you don't know which instances might be infected and which may be not. And it's also complicated by cloud computing, joining the data center as primary places of computing taking place. So you've got a wider, I guess, physical and geographic territory to worry about.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think when it comes to cloud and containerization, I've seen a lot of usages there where people have deployed and said, well, the security tools just don't exist to do what I was doing on-prem. And oftentimes they do. It's maybe just a different vendor or a different way of looking at things. So I think it's really important that people take that continuous evaluation look of their tools and of their deployment of cloud technologies, containerization, virtualization, how you're using your cloud services. Most of the cloud providers do have some solutions in place. So you have to have good active discussions with your cloud providers as well as your vendors. Because what you were doing on-prem, to your point, may be very, very different for how you ensure you have the same security level within your cloud environments.
Right. So that your backup plan and your point in time recovery and all of those different metrics have to be timed just so that you can back up or recover, that is to say, as close to the moment you had a problem as possible because of data loss, mm-hmm. and especially in operational situations, but yet not 1 second past it, or then you're backing up the bad stuff and recovering from the bad stuff.
Absolutely. And this is where, we still look at like recovery point objectives and how much data can I lose? There are some systems that we might just have to accept it's perfectly fine if I lose a week's worth of data. There are other systems, to your point, where we simply can't have that in the private and public sector. So it's really important that people understand their data and what does it take to run your mission, whether that's in the private or public sector. What is that minimum set that we absolutely need? And what is the timeline for when we can lose some data. It's very hard in some areas, particularly, you know, healthcare. We need to know what that patient's record says and what medicines they're on in the hospital. So I really do think that across the board, to your point, it's not just a federal government agency's networks. This is across the board that these issues are becoming more and more prevalent.
And by the way, what have you learned from HackDHS? What are some of the takeaways there?
I think first and foremost, we learned, at least on the CISR side, our system owners have really embraced it. They're really having a good partnership with the team. I think we have found I don't have the latest stats with me, but there have been a number of vulnerabilities found that we're very thankful for that we're working to mitigate. I did see on our side a very rapid response. I didn't see any negativity at all, which was very gratifying. So it's definitely something I'm going to work on expanding and run continuously at CISA. I think the rest of DHS has experienced that as well. We knew things would be found, but we also, I think sometimes when you start something new, people can have that a little bit of, well, we don't really like this. We're not going to really respond to it. And that wasn't the case. People across the board have benefited from it. And I think we're also seeing how we can embrace these type of penetration testings and hacking events to improve throughout our systems, as well as we move into, you know, SecDevOps and other methodologies to continuously improve our security posture, because we simply don't have enough people at DHS to run all these pen tests that we can absolutely get from the private sector or working with the hacker community, which is something that we are absolutely thrilled to be exploring here at CISA.
Yeah, so it pays to get the most you can out of those reverse industry days and whatever types of interactions you have as an agency with industry.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, our industry partnerships are critical. On the 26th, we have an industry day here at CISA for the CIO's office. We're calling it a mini industry day. But I really do encourage people, you know, the vendor community can't help the federal government if they don't know what our requirements are. So if we're not all talking, if the only time we talk is when we drop a, you know, an RFI or an RFQ, we need to improve that. And we need to make sure that we're having good, positive interactions with the vendor community, that we're running proofs of values, and that we're working together, because I do believe that that will lead to better results.
Bob Costello, Chief Information Security Officer at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. To hear this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Tamman.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Veritas on Federal News Network.
Whether you're migrating to the cloud, from the cloud, or between clouds, protecting your data and ensuring business continuity are critical priorities. Veritas can help you build a unified multi-cloud strategy with resiliency at its core to help ensure strategic and mission-critical decisions. Our enterprise data services platform is designed to give government agencies the confidence and control to transform, protect, and optimize your multi-cloud. Visit veritas.com/government for more information.
When we need help, we turn to government. When government needs help, they turn to Federal News Network.
Federal News Network.
For news on the federal pay raise.
To learn how other agencies handle IT modernization.
To see how Congress funds my agency.
For changes to my TRICARE benefits.
For the latest on my security clearance.
Federal News Network. Federal News Network. Helping.